Blog Talk Radio.
New York Times best-selling author, her name is Leon Moriarty. She has sold more than 14 million books worldwide, and Hollywood has sure taken notice. Nicole Kidman is set to star and executive produce the adaptation of Moriarty's new page-turner. It's called Nine Perfect Strangers. This book follows people trying to transform their lives at a wellness retreat run by a very, how shall we say, eccentric leader. Trust me, you don't want to go there. Leon Moriarty joins us at the table to discuss. It's so good to meet you in
person.
Yes,
I know.
Really big fan of your work. But let's talk about this, why you decided to set it at a wellness retreat, because something stood out to me. You said men always talk about dropping weight. Women talk about losing weight, and that's so true. Why did you decide? Don't you think that's true?
Oh, yeah.
I've never heard a guy, John, say, you know, I need to lose some weight. They say, I need to drop some weight. Mm-hmm. What's the distinction there, and why did you choose to have it at a retreat?
Well, I think the distinction is just that women obviously have such an emotional connection to their bodies and such a sense of shame, mm-hmm. whereas men just, they drop. They can, and also they do just drop the weight.
Yeah,
it's much
easier
for them.
So
that's part of it. And the reason I chose to set it at a wellness retreat, it actually all started with a joke.
Uh-huh.
So after Big Little Lies came out, I kept making the same joke, and the joke was, I'm going to set my next book at a tropical island resort, and I'm going to have to do a lot of research, meticulous research.
Yeah.
But then I started thinking, actually, why not? A tropical island resort could make a perfect setting for a book. But then I recalled a health resort that I went to with a girlfriend where we smuggled in some contraband.
What's contraband?
So things, well, so alcohol, so important little things like champagne and chocolates and coffee.
It was taken away from you.
Well, no, they did see it in the back of the car, but then they drove the car off, so then we had to hunt through the resort until we tracked down the car.
Yeah.
So we got it in the end.
Well, you do need something to get you through all of that wellness.
To get through that.
Yes, exactly.
Gosh. Why? No, but there's something about what people are seeking when they are going to seek wellness. It's not just relaxation.
It's transformation, really. I think it's that desire to be somebody else. So when I was doing research for this book, I did just a little 5-day retreat, and I remember on the drive there honestly thinking to myself, maybe I'll be transformed by the end of this 5 days. But of course I stopped at the first cafe on the way back home.
And which character do you see Nicole Kidman playing?
Definitely the Marsha, so the 6-foot-tall, charismatic, narcissistic Russian resort leader.
Good casting. Yeah. We can't help but notice your Australian accent. Yeah. And you are the first Australian author to debut number one in this country. Go you.
Thank you. Thank
For
you
Big
so
Little
much.
Lies.
For Big Little Lies. Which, before there was any announcement about the TV series.
So you did that on
Yes, I'd just like to say that I did that on my own.
And it's part two, and you got Meryl Streep, Leon.
I got Meryl, yes. Mm-hmm. So my sister said to me, only write it if you think it would be fun to write it, and why not write a role for your favourite actress? Mm-hmm. So I thought, why not write a role for Meryl Streep? And then I was looking up to see what her middle name was, because I thought it might be fun to call the character by her middle name, and I found out that her real name is Mary Louise.
Wow.
So I called the character Mary Louise. Which
aiming high. Moriarty, thank you so much. And Nine Perfect Strangers is on sale now.
Well, that was Leanne Moriarty, who is one of the authors we are featuring tonight. Along with Jeffrey Eugenides, and these were authors chosen by my co-host Neutron Baum, and I'm not sure exactly where Neutron is, but we are going to get started, and I'm sure she'll join if and when she is able. So let's start out with a SoundCloud. So this one, let me just pull it. Let's see. I'm getting it. Okay. This is SoundCloud. getting in there. We're almost there, I promise. I'm getting it. There it is. This is SoundCloud by Eric Svensson. I'm sorry, by Eric Svensson. Called Something, Some Old, Some New. Okay, here it is. I apologize. I've been traveling, so I'm a little tired. But it's called Some Old, Something New. Something Borrowed, Something Blue. And I'm going to go ahead and play that SoundCloud. I'm going to put the link into the group. So there's that. And then let me play the SoundCloud.
Something old, something new. Something borrowed, something blue. The day arrived. Boarding gate 999 glowed brightly. Colors changed like an old-fashioned lava lamp. Ambient music, maybe even angelic, permeated the departure hall. Something was different, uncanny, yet it all seemed oddly familiar. Must be the bright mercury lights overhead, I thought, looking up at 9 light beams. Expectant passengers either sat or stood. Suddenly it dawned on me, not that I was a thought reader, but I could read the thoughts of each passenger. An elderly lady in a chic cashmere coat turned around, smiled and said, "Thank you, dear man. You're so kind." Telepathy. This must be telepathy. Ice bucket challenge realization drenched. A translucent film of light surrounded each passenger. Keen Rolodex mind immediately reverted back to comparative study between mainstream Western and Eastern religions, spiritual philosophies studied over many years. Certainly not clairvoyant, maybe a bit intuitive at times, I felt a bold, boisterous butterfly wanting to emerge from my own translucent chrysalis. Avid traveler, frequent flyer with a penchant for first-class travel, this flight was different from the word go. "It's the one flight you'll never have to pay for, sir." Bright blue eyes beamed across the desk. "You sure about that?" The travel agent smiled warmly, nodded a decisive yes. "Must be accumulated Voyager miles," I thought. Never one for nitty-gritty details, I left it at that. The ambient angelic music in the departure hall suddenly intensified. Boarding gate 999 glowed a deep Delft blue. The lady in the cashmere coat blew a kiss. "What a glorious pink 999 is, don't you think?" A telepathic message floated towards me. I must have frowned, for she smiled kindly. She parted with, "Each soul mansion has its unique color vibration. Enjoy your flight." Before I could send a telepathic message, at the speed of light, she was gone. Suddenly, all the expectant passengers were gone. The final boarding call for my solar plexus region skipped 9 beats as I glided towards the boarding gate. Slightly giddy, certainly glad, extremely excited about the new quantum field university on the horizon. 90 years of study on campus Earth certainly had satisfied some of my curiosity. As I sank into my plush royal blue velvet seat, a list of 9 unanswered questions streamed through my heart area. End poem.
Thank you, Eric, for the SoundCloud. So I'm still flying solo. I'm not sure exactly what happened with Neutron. I'm sure she'll get on as soon as she is able, but let me get some comments. Let me start out with Neutron's comment. And that was, she said, I like the repetition of nine throughout. It seems to have a special significance, almost like the number seven in Judeo-Christian religions. My favorite part was, certainly not clairvoyant, maybe a bit intuitive at times, I felt a bold, boisterous butterfly wanting to emerge from my own translucent chrysalis. Avid traveler, frequent flyer with a penchant for first-class travel, this flight was different from the word go. It's the one flight you'll never have to pay for, sir. Bright blue eyes beamed across the desk. You're sure about that? It was tongue-in-cheek, as always, and an interesting take on the prompt. Maybe now and have changed to vaping rather than death sticks. I will. Oh, she's saying maybe now that she has taken to vaping as opposed to smoking death sticks, she will have a chance at cracking 90 years on this planet. A great story poem. And now I will take a look and see what I wrote. So, I actually like the same quote, the avid traveler, frequent flyer, penchant for first class travel. This flight was different from the word go. So I love this piece, Eric. A Burroughs-esque meets the Tibetan Book of the Dead vibe that was hypnotic and compelling. I found myself lost in this surreal, near-death experience, Bardo state. Very trippy indeed, which, as you know, I personally love. So that was our comment. And with that, I am going to pull the next poem. So give me just a sec, and I will do that. Okay. And, of course, the technology is giving me a bit of trouble here as well. But I'm getting there. Okay. Getting closer. Let's see. Okay, let me go here. This is nice and easy. So this poem is by our friend I Love Poems, also known as Sawa. And I'm just going to pull it, and then I will play her SoundCloud. So, okay, her poem is in the chat. Let me pull the SoundCloud.
Yes, one, dear you, cher toi, to you, midnight has already passed, and I quickly was hesitant to write to you. I will hardly write praise, rather what my heart whispers to me. Life has put you in my way. You have delighted my heart with such force. I was almost crazy about you. I didn't know what was happening to me no more. My tired eyes wanted to read you repeatedly. They were thirsty to talk to you about everything and nothing, to hear you, to see you for real. I kept thinking about you. Long ago, the days were cruel. They made me suffer and stole my dreams. And there I was, I dreamt of sweet dreams that beautify me with glares. Yet, as soon as the sun went down tonight, I remember nothing was meant to be. It bent my heart. Cher toi, minuit a déjà passé, ma plume m'hésitait de t'écrire. Cependant, je n'écrirai guère des éloges, plutôt ce que mon cœur me souffle. La vie t'a mis sur mon chemin. Tu as ravi mon cœur avec une telle force. J'étais presque folle de toi. C'est plus que m'est arrivé. mes yeux fatigués voulaient te lire et te relire sans cesse. J'avais soif de te parler de tout et de rien, de t'entendre, de te voir pour de vrai. Je ne cessais de penser à toi. Il n'y a pas longtemps, le jour était cruel. Ils m'ont fait tant souffrir. Ils m'ont fait voler mes rêves. Et là, je rêvais de beaux rêves qui m'ont embelli. Pourtant, dès que le soleil s'est couché aujourd'hui, je me suis rappelé, rien n'était censé être. Ça a serré mon cœur. End of poem.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Sawa. And my spidey sense tells me that we now have Pam on the air with us. How you doing, Pam?
Oh, I am doing great. How are you doing, Richard?
I'm doing really good. Thanks so much for joining me. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what happened with Neutron. You know, sometimes life just throws curveballs. But I'm hoping
truly
she's okay.
Does. Me
yeah,
too.
I'm hoping that
Me
she's
too.
Okay and she can join us soon, or if not, that, you know, at least she's just, something came up and she's fine, though. But I'm so glad you could join me as we celebrate the poetry of these two authors that actually Neutron picked. so
oh,
she
nice.
Knows
now,
both
were
of them
they
really well.
Friends? Were they a married couple? Like, how is it that their names were used together? I'm curious. I actually honestly don't know anything about them.
So here's how it worked. We had done a show where it was Percy Bysshe Shelley and also an Indian poet who I wasn't, an Indian poet who I wasn't as familiar with. And it seemed to go really well. So what Neutron suggested is she just threw out, I said, do you have an idea for our next show? And she threw out three authors. And I figured, well, more the merrier. I think it worked really well that when we had the show where we did Shelley and this other Indian author whose name escapes me now. So let's just put these two, get prompts, you know, 12 prompts. Six from each author. And that's really their only connection that I know of, other than Neutron loves
okay.
them both.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
Awesome.
So, and
awesome.
The,
well, I look forward
yeah.
to the show tonight and the poetry.
Oh, thanks again. Yeah, no, I really appreciate you joining me. I kind of cheated because it was just me. And so what I did was I played Eric's sound. Obviously, we always start with the intro, which is an audio. And then I had Eric's SoundCloud, and now we just pulled Sawa's SoundCloud. So it makes
yep.
it seem like there was more people in the room.
Oh, absolutely. And honestly, I would have responded sooner. But funny thing is I'm trying to write a song about Irish serial killer Kieran Kelly that can be sung like an Irish pub song, because it just came to me in a moment of inspiration. But I figured, I can put that on hold, finish that up later, and just, you know, hang out in here. Because I know what it's like to have days and nights where, you know, everybody's got their own thing they're doing, and, you know, you don't want to spend an entire show just talking to yourself. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I understand it. Yeah, and I understand it's, you know, it's St. Paddy's Day, so I think that is part of the issue.
Absolutely.
You know, people
absolutely.
Are busy. They're out celebrating. I get it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I don't know if you had a chance to hear Salva SoundCloud.
I didn't get to hear the whole thing, but I did get to read the poem. As always, her SoundClouds are very much appreciated. She has a beautiful, beautiful reading voice, and the way she can read in different languages is just always amazing to me. And I like that this is a letter form. And I like that it's dear you, but no specific name. So we know that she's most likely has in her heart, in her mind, who she's writing to. But we, as the reader, can fill in a name that means something to us. Life has been put you in my way. You have delighted my heart with such force, you know, and just the power of love. I kept thinking about you. Not long ago, the days were cruel that made me suffer and stole my dreams. And there's such a feeling of helplessness, a feeling of despair, you know, and then kind of that idea of a hope coming along. I don't know, it's just, it's very emotive, it's very heartfelt, and I like that she brings us into her heart, but also allows us to put our own in there. So, very well done.
Absolutely, yeah, really great insights. Yeah, and Salwa wrote to the prompt, perhaps nothing was ever meant to be. There's just life right now, and doing your best, being a bit bendy, which is a great way, as opposed to saying flexible or, you know, open-minded. Bendy is just great. And I didn't realize it until I pulled the YouTube audio that Moriarty is actually Australian, like Neutron. So.
Oh, okay.
That was kind of, yeah. So
was
maybe bendy
Moriarty
is like
the bad guy in Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, I'm guessing no relationship, though. Yeah, but maybe bendy is an Aussie saying, too, so it could be that. And I, too, really loved where she went with this prompt. Yet as soon as the sun went down tonight, I remembered nothing was meant to be. It bent my heart. Which I like how she took the bendy thing and bent my heart. I thought it was just, you know, it had her trademark beauty and trademark lyricism. And it was just breathtaking poetry. It's really well done. So I am truly appreciative of her work. And I guess these writers and these prompts really inspired her because she came back later on, you know, just we run our show every 2 weeks, and she kind of closed out the contest by adding another one. So, so she was obviously still inspired by it. Okay, so what I will do is pull another poem. And I think what I'm going to do, just to mix it up even more, is we had a few carryovers from the Vonnegut contest, which we didn't have a chance because people really were inspired by that as well. We didn't have a chance to go through all of the poems from 2 weeks ago. So I kind of saved them and figured we would put them forward now. None of them had SoundCloud, so I was holding off until I had someone else that could read. And now that I do, Pam, if I could ask you, I'm putting it into the room now, if you could read Uma's poem.
All right. Up next we have Even God Needs an Escape by Uma 71. And it goes like this. There is this God that wants everyone to survive and everyone to die. He has to balance in a way that he seems impartial to, somewhere in his heaven or hell. In life's original forest, a tiger is camouflaged in the shrubs. At the terminal edge of dusk, if the spotted deer catches vibrations of his light-footed stir on dry thistle, he runs for his life at a speed that tires the predator easily. But there is a day when he gives up his precautious alacrity, lets the tiger have his meal, ravenous after 7 failed attempts and 8. The god is so proud of his game, the frail fawn and his mighty predator, unlike the leading bearer of his intelligence, who blames him for all his losses and feels blessed for a tiny gain, never appreciating the equation at its at his end, end poem.
Nicely read, Pam. Yeah, so this was So It Goes prom, which a lot of people chose during the Vonnegut poetry night. And I love this piece. The metaphor is truly skillful, and the close has an almost fable-like quality that I found quite satisfying. The god is so proud of his game, the frail fawn and his mighty predator, unlike the leading bearer of his intelligence who blames him for all his losses and feels blessed for a tiny gain, never appreciating the equation at his end. Just an amazing piece of poetry, just so beautiful. And, you know, it has that kind of like savage beauty of nature, you know, the predator and the prey. And it's awful, but it's life too. And there is a beauty in that equation, you know, the equation that she refers to. So I think she handled that reality and the metaphor of the nature of life in all of its hues, both good and bad, quite skillfully. So very well done. And what did you think, Pam?
All right, just let me try to unmute. I'm always a big fan of Uma 71's poetry. It's always so spiritual. And I like how you call this a raw and savage beauty. I think that was a perfect phrase to describe this. And I like how she takes us back to the beginning of time, back into a Garden of Eden type setting, where there's the predator and there's the prey, and they both know they play their parts, and they both know they have their moments of blessings and their moments of failure. But they accept it. It is part of life. It is part of creating that balance. And I really like how this poem is about creating balance, because it's truly one of my core personal beliefs, is that to try in everything in life, you know, to create a balance. And I like how it reminds us that we humans, the so-called intelligent ones, are the ones who are so quick to point our finger at a higher power with blame, you know, when something is going wrong, but all of a sudden that higher power is our best friend when we're feeling blessed. I just really feel there's a strength within the message of this rite that I really appreciate.
Excellent comment. Thanks so much, Pam. So in the interest of kind of keeping it moving in a different way and having us save our voices, I am going to put a SoundCloud, a poem that has a SoundCloud, into the room. And I will play that SoundCloud.
I've Been Here Before by Martha Gattle. I've been here before. I hoped I wouldn't be here anymore. I can feel my heart is breaking in two. As I have to face, I'm losing you. I can feel the tears run down my face. As the lonely fills this place. But I have been lost and alone, and I have come through it on my own. Yes, I might be crying now, but I know I'll get through it somehow. Someday I will look up and see a brand new life waiting for me. So let the pain, let it fill my apart. I am stronger than the hurt you left, and I will make it just fine by myself. Yes, I might be crying now, but I know I'll get through it somehow. Someday I will look up and see a brand new life waiting for me. Because love is a gamble, I know, and you never know which way it's going to go. It can leave you with a lover for all time, or it can leave you with a broken heart and mind.
Thank you so much for the SoundCloud, Martha. So, I love this piece. So let the pain, let it fill my heart. I know I won't let it tear me apart. I am stronger than the hurt you left, and I will make it just fine by myself. I thought this was a heartfelt speaking of truth about the transient nature of love and how she decides to say yes to it despite the reality of loss and grieving. I thought it was wonderful work. And, you know, Pam, I think we had this discussion about the transient nature of love. I mean, it attacked your long-term memory. Remember, I did I participated in a show that you did that was celebrating, who was it? It was Infinite Jest, David Foster Wallace. And one of his quotes is, every love story is a ghost story. And I think that Martha really nails that. If that were to be a quote for this poem, that would have worked perfectly as well. So I thought it was an excellent job, excellent poetry. And great song, too. I love, she does these acapellas every time and just nails it. And what do you think, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree with you. And yes, that would have gone well with this quote. I always appreciate Martha's sound clouds and her down-to-earth sound that she always has in her voice. This is a beautiful chorus, a beautiful song all the way. And I do like how, as you mentioned, how it's about that transient nature of love, but and then how it's the idea of a woman who found strength, you know, to go on with life after love betrayed her and found that strength again, you know, to heal herself and to be open to the idea of loving again. So absolutely beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment. Okay, so with that, I am going to pull another poem from the board. And let's go back to our carryovers from the Vonnegut Night. Computer's a little bit slow tonight, I don't know why. Okay, we'll get there. Here we go.
Oh, absolutely. Sometimes technology can be like that.
Yeah. Okay, so I do have it. I will give it a read. It's a short one. It's by Jason John Morgan called Ice Nine. And it's actually a shape poem. An atom falls in an old pond, floating into a stream of unconsciousness, transcending into a river that no man has stepped in twice, and chilling slavery, blank, finally reaching the ocean. It was beheld by the eyes of Cortez, plunging the world into a new frozen era from Petlet, a molecule, end poem. Those shape poems can be tough at the end like that. Nevertheless, I thought this was a beautiful piece of shape poetry. I love Cat's Cradle, which is what inspired the Vonnegut novel that inspired the poem. And the author notes highlights the truly layered nature of the brevity. Inspiration came from a film called The Recruit, where Ice Nine from Vonnegut's novel Cat's Cradle is actually a computer virus. The idea of it traveling from pond to stream to river to lake to ocean is taken from a quote from Walter Burke, played by Al Pacino, to James Clayton, played by Colin Farrell. And there's other, you know, despite the fact that this was brevity, there are other references. So this is obviously a very layered brevity. Very well done. And your thoughts, Pam?
Well, I would love to share my thoughts with you, but first of all, I think you should welcome your co-host to the show.
Hey, you made it.
Sorry, guys. I didn't realize the time zone changed again. I'm sitting here waiting for it to start in half an hour. The one time I don't check.
Okay, so just backstory. So does Australia participate in daylight saving?
Yes, but we're at vastly different times. So we're actually in summer at the moment. So our daylight savings will change probably in another month or two. So I was happily sitting here thinking, la-di-da, I've got half an hour till showtime. It's all good. And then I looked at Blog Talk and I'm like, oh, shit.
Well, I will say, Fill My Eyes has created a deep bullpen. So, you know, and now that I am my own boss, I have my own company since 2001, I'm probably not as useful as I used to be back in the old days. But, you know, I got on the computer and reached out, and sure enough, Pam was helping me out. So it was all good.
Aw,
but you were definitely
Pam.
Missed.
Oh, absolutely. Man, I swear, this is like literally the only week I haven't checked in advance. And, of course, this is the week that the time zone changes, like literally the only week. I was like, maybe I'm off by a month.
Yeah, well, you know, the funny part is, too, that the show is every other week. So it could have been, you know, it could have been that you would have had the ability to catch it had it not been this Sunday that we had, you know, done the rollover. In other words, if this was like our week and the show was next week, you probably would have caught it.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway.
Exactly.
It is all
so welcome
good.
To the
and
program.
I'm so glad
it's a bit late.
Yeah. So, and I'm so glad that you could join us. Now, tell us about the authors that you chose for tonight.
Okay, so Jeffrey Eugenides, and I'm not sure if I've got his name pronunciation right, was an author that I was drawn to, particularly for Virgin Suicides, when I was much younger. And he also did another text called Middlesex, which was quite popular as well, that I was introduced to.
Mm.
And then Leanne Moriarty is an Australian writer, and a lot of her novels have been adapted to shows on the likes of HBO. And I thought,
mm-hmm.
interestingly enough, when you were selecting the prompts, they actually melded quite well together.
Right.
I was really impressed with the prompts you chose, actually, because between the two of them, they've done quite a lot of novels, and you've selected the ones that aren't as well known, which is great because it just opens up the ability for writers to take it where they want to take it. And our poets delivered, especially this week, realistically every week that we run this program fortnightly. And, I was in my pre-reading, I was very impressed with the writing. I see Naomi's actually done one from Middlesex at the end mm-hmm. of the the list there, and there weren't a lot of prompts that were actually chosen in clumps, if you know what I mean. So we did get usually we have one or two that resonate really well with our writers, but this week it was quite spread out, so I was quite impressed with that as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So, and just so you know, just to bring you up to speed, all the SoundCloud have been played, so if you see anything
okay.
SoundCloud, you know, we're already covered. I've gone through the first two of the carryovers on Vonnegut. So Uma which is still up. I don't think we've actually commented on it yet. I think I commented. I think that's about it. I think that's it. Maybe one more. I don't know. But I'll help you out if it's a dupe. So we're now on Ice Nine, one of the carryovers, and I know that that you actually had a comment on this one as well.
Yeah, look, I have to say, on first review, I would have merely spoken about the skillful way that it was constructed like a shape poem. But after reading the mm-hmm. author note, it's quite a layered piece, and in my mind it required a second read, especially after reading the inspiration came from the film. There was the idea of the old pond from Matsuo Bushō's famous haiku, and the list goes on. There's about five or six different influences that went into the writing of this brevity. And I have to say, the fact that it is a brevity and it's that layered and there's that much inherent meaning behind it was fantastic, right down to the drop of dew with the exclamation point at the end. So very well done.
Absolutely, yeah. I was thinking the same thing. Boy, for a brevity, quite a layered write. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I have to agree with you both that wonderful brevity, really awesome how he made it into a shape, giving the sense of flowing downwards. I really like the information added in the AN because while I think the poem stands well on its own, it is so really interesting and cool to me to be able to read that extra information. I thought it was particularly clever, as you mentioned, that the idea of an old pond is a reference to Matsuo Bushō's famous haiku. I thought that was particularly interesting. And to me, I like how what intrigues me is that I get the idea, the general theme of creation and destruction throughout this rite. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. All right, so Neutron, I see that you have our next carryover up. Who would you like to read it?
Look, I might give this one a read, seeing as I'm late to the show. So
great. Sounds good.
So this one's by Just Michael G, and it's called Mother Night. The angry sea rages beneath the moonless sky. Blasts of chill air wisp white-capped shorewards, buffeted by ink-black gusts. Mother Night shows me past roads not taken and lost possibilities. The angry sea rages, but I face the stubborn truth about playing make-believe in cold reality, how all roads can't be taken. Our choices like waves rippling out in every direction until crashing upon the beach of another person's shore. End poem. And that was written to prompt four, we are what we pretend to be, so we must be careful about what we pretend to be, from Mother Night.
Excellent read, Neutron. Yeah, I love this piece. I loved how he came with his interpretation off of this prompt, just a well-crafted metaphor, and very well done. The angry sea rages, but I face a stubborn truth about plain make-believe and cold reality, how all roads can't be taken, the choices like waves. I mean, it's just a brilliant take on the prompt. I thought it was really well done. And what do you think, Neutron?
Well, I really enjoyed the slow build in the poem. And there's a sense of rumination as well, the thought that eventually when you pretend, it collides with reality and that there will be consequences on another person's shore. My favorite part was buffeted by ink-black dust. Mother Night shows me past roads not taken and lost possibilities. And I think I just have a soft spot in general for couplet structures, so I thought that worked really well as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, so with that, let's turn to our next piece. Where would you like to go next?
Firstly, I have to take myself off of mute. we've got one more carryover, right. I believe, from Peter Solway. So I'll put this one on the board now.
Okay.
All right. So if Richard, have you read recently?
Not at all.
Oh,
no,
yes, you did.
Okay,
cool.
Okay.
All right. You can give it a read.
Okay. So this is Peter Solway. It's called Hey, Kurt. Know you're deceased. Nazis finally hit end of consciousness. Adolf nailing your coffin naked as a skeleton. Your cheap pine for the fled German. Slim volume of Kurt Jr. American. Vinegar traitor. Dour narrator. Stabbing at Christ with butt. No replies from the illiterate dead as yet. Adolf and Kurt, all silent as mutton-dressed lambs, wishing for such publication, writing any shite they wish or want. German-Jewish passports, idols of mythic masturbation, trains through tunnels, art of excess, dogs of death, but cursed in safe bus. Smoking plus, touring the likes of Harvard, Columbus. Pretty students with questions to answer over drinks. Albert angling in, better hairdo and equations. Hunting for grouse on weekend, getting all their undivided attention. Writer of laconic fiction, lighting up another one. Dresden still burning, cattle. Still screaming, art, still impossible. End of poem. So, what'd you think, Neutron?
Well, I have to say, this was a very hard-hitting poem, and I think selecting you as the reader was a happy accident because I think it really suited your style of read. Probably one of the more scathing poems entered into the contest. And my favorite part, or the one that hit hardest, was no replies from the illiterate dead as yet, Adolf and Kurt all silent, as mutton-dressed lambs wishing for such publication, writing any shite they wish or want. And I suppose it's, I don't know, on second read, it reminds me that history is generally written by the people that survive or that win. And I don't know if it was a satirical almost piece in relation to that. So very well done. Nicely penned.
Sorry about
Richard,
that. I was
you
talking
on
to the mute. Yep, I was. So just so you don't have to feel bad, like you were the only one that did it, I did it too. When I looked, I was like, geez, this is a brilliant poem. And I looked to see if we had meddled it. And it just speaks to the quality of the work we get here every 2 weeks that that it didn't meddle. I mean, in other poetry contests, this is a gold poem. I mean, it's just so brilliant and so well written. Writer of laconic fiction, lighting up another one, Dresden still burning, cattle still screaming, art still impossible. It brings us that postmodernist paradox of irony, humor, and existential horror of the post-World War II world, a fitting right for today's headlines as well. Just, you know, right there, right? The war between Russia and Ukraine, just you feel it. And that's the thing about great writing is it's timeless. It always hits because it goes to the core of the human condition. And I think that poem hit. So very well done. And with that, I'm bringing it back to you, Neutron.
Okay, so next we've got a poem by Crafty Mermaid, which I'm hoping that... Oh, Pam just got back, if you want to get a comment from her, if she's listened to the poem by Peter.
Oh,
well,
yeah, go ahead.
To be honest, as much as I enjoy and appreciate your solid poetry, I really have to at least read his poem fully once. To really give a halfway decent comment, and I didn't get back in time, so I'll just.
Funnily enough,
on
you're not
one.
The only one who said that before. Peter Solway is an acquired taste, and I find that when I first started reading his poems, I had to read them like 8 times to be able to make a comment.
Right, so exactly.
I completely
exactly.
understand that.
But I was glad
to see
that he was inspired.
Yeah, and it was so funny. The last episode of my show before we rounded it up, he actually put, I think you aired it on your program, he actually put the prompt in there and Captain almost fell over. So it was hysterical.
Oh, I know. That was funny.
And Pam, would you be able to read... Crafty Mermaid's poem, if you can.
Absolutely. The photo by Crafty Mermaid, and it goes like this. What she forgot was how the red dress made her feel, how the neckline caught his attention. Looking at the photo, she actually smiled. Crimson red over and over, and corduroy for the North Atlantic, aboard the Queen Elizabeth II, as she... royalty parted the remnants of Hurricane Gloria. Beautiful photo, not too close nor too far, to see the churning stomach, to hear the pounding headache. We had a whale of a time. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And that was to the prompt, but maybe every life looked wonderful if all you saw was the photo album. And what a great hit on that prompt. The poem truly gives us a feeling of nostalgia, an insight into how bright memories are sparked by frozen imagery like photos. That was very insightful and well-crafted, just a great riffing off the prompt. And Neutron, your thoughts?
You know, like on second listen to that poem, it reminds me of I'd just been made redundant and I was cashed up and decided I'd take my best mate on a holiday, but I was in the midst of a terrible depression. So the photos were cracking. They were absolutely sparkling. It was in the wet Sundays. But my mood was the lowest it had ever been in my life. So I think this poem, you really feel this stanza encapsulated in the prompt you just mentioned, Richard. Beautiful photo, not too close nor too far to see the churning stomach, to hear the pounding headache. And if only the prompt was reality, I have this theory that we remember what we gravitate to as a person, either the light or the dark. And I was drawn to this line here, looking at the photo, she actually smiled. Well done.
Great comment. And I'm just going to take this moment to say that particular job, maybe it is redundant for you or whatever, but you are never redundant on this show.
Oh, thank you, Richard.
And I too really like this thing. Pam, you as our reader, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, I really like this. Another wonderful brevity. I like that it does remind us that oftentimes we find ourselves looking back and remembering things fondly when we look at a single picture, a single captured moment. And what I really like about this is how the second stanza really adds a feeling of being a story, of being an epic story of not only love, but of leaving one's own home country, of you know, going off on an adventure. So just a beautifully written and very well done.
Excellent comment. And Neutron, with that, I'm turning it back to you for our next one.
Okay, so we've got a poem by T. Michelle, and I might give this one a read, and then we'll get, is Naomi on the phone, or is she just on the board at the moment?
I only see her on the board at this point.
Okay, that's fine. I'll await further instructions, because I think she was going to call in potentially.
I think so, too. She has a poem, so I'll private message her in the meantime.
Okay. All right, so this one's by T. Michelle, and it's called You and All Other Things Considered Untrue. Sunstrokes on mellow spring begin to fade. Wreaths of a season sit yonder in a sunset valley, the landscape of a maze hiding behind your eyelids. I absentmindedly write to blue or not to blue against soft lips and chocolate freckles, as tallow candlesticks melt on piles of pebbles scattered all over a showy meadow of elderflowers and forget-me-not, more you than me, more you than anyone. You tell me it's the way of lotus seeds to ignite their parade before they drift across the river to another shore where they are unknown, like I know a thing about drifting away from home, days shortened, simmering under curtains pulled over the moon. Kerosene lanterns come out too early, glowing upon a face hanging on the garden wall, this puzzle in brushstrokes and ink. But what do I know about oil paintings or snuffed shadows or about longings and poems? And that was written to prompt 10, Those We Love Don't Go Away, They Sit Beside Us Every Day, from Big Little Lies.
That was a great read, Neutron. And Pam, starts comments with you if we can.
Oh, my goodness. I tell you, T. Michelle always has some of the most powerful poetry I have ever read, just brilliant imagery and metaphors. I really love the imagery of chocolate freckles as tallow candlesticks melt on piles of pebbles scattered all over a showy meadow of elderflowers and forget-me-nots. And then the stanza after this, you tell me it's the way of low seeds to ignite. That whole stanza there, first of all, it just makes for a wonderful metaphor for the idea of someone who travels off into the unknown, from a place where they were particularly, like, perhaps blessed, you know, fit in to somewhere where they weren't even acknowledged for their gift. That's kind of the idea I get. But I really just particularly am drawn to that stanza, but the whole rite is absolutely magnificent in the way that it shows us this kind of desire for love and for life, and beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
It was an absolute pleasure to read this. I always find that with T. Michelle's poems. I was drawn to this section here. Kerosene lanterns come out too early, glowing upon a face hanging on the garden wall. This puzzle in brushstrokes and ink. But what do I know about oil paintings or snuff shadows or about longing for that matter? And just that last line there seems to indicate that it's more of a love connection than a platonic one, but it works equally well in either manner. And I really enjoyed Pam's comment there. For me, it reminds me of my best mate who passed last year, and just that longing into the unknown. He was quite a spiritual person, and I like to think that he's sitting upstairs somewhere looking down on us. But it equally could work in real life, as Pam mentioned, for someone that travels into the unknown. So it's quite a multi-layered ride, and as always, the metaphors are just on point. Great poem.
Absolutely. Great insights. You know, that's the beautiful thing about doing this on the air is that it's almost like a car accident. We can all see it from different angles and get different insights. I want to take a moment to bring Naomi on.
Hello.
Hi, Naomi.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Naomi.
Hi. Hi, Neutron. I think Pam's there too, eh? Hi, Pam.
Okay,
so Naomi, I'm just getting your poem up now.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry, Richard, I cut you off.
Oh, I wasn't in a hurry.
Okay, no worries. Actually, let me just take a moment to say that I love this piece by T. Michelle. It had a surreal, dreamlike vibe that was quite inventive and satisfying. Compelling take on the prompt, showing reality is subjective and lacking solidity. And boy, every 2 weeks, T. Michelle brings it. And this one was no exception. It's just an amazing piece. Okay, with that, I am turning it back to you, Neutron.
I just posted to the board. I'm like a chook without my head. I'm half an hour late, and I've got my pants around my ankles, and off we go.
it's
Naomi,
great, though. We're
And this is when you get to see me fly by the seat of my pants, as they put it in Australia. I'll get into the groove of things probably in the last 5 minutes.
No, you're doing great.
Oh, man. And Naomi, when you're ready, I've got your poem up.
Yeah. Well, I wrote to the quote about the day being humid and heavy there. The one, I don't remember it word for word there, but there was one about how the humidity hung in the air, and mm-hmm. as if it was, so I wrote to that one. Okay, this is the Saturday clothesline. I stare at the wrinkled photograph curling at the corners. My mom and I sitting on the old wooden porch, my hand to my forehead above tiny squinted eyes. It must have been one of those stuffy hot summer days that seems hung in a bee's sticky legs dripping of honey when the sky is hard and brittle as if ready to crack open, smothered under a candy coating that muffles the breeze. I seem to be no older than six, and of course no smile. But I never did back then, not on one single picture. My mother has no smile either. Her arms are crossed. I noticed we have the same serious stare, as if our brains had floated out of our bodies to elsewhere. And then I see the crowded clothesline hanging heavy. We were too poor to own a washer and dryer, so every Saturday Mama scrubbed all our week's ghosts by hand on a washboard, the knuckle buster, she called it. Then she'd separate the clothes to put the clean ones out on the clothesline with wooden clothespins. I remember her singing hymns about Jesus saving the world, as if she was hanging up broken souls. Perhaps a little bit of mine, so she could finally see me smile. But I really think she was hanging up all of hers. Because what my mother never knew was that I was always there, always listening behind her closed bedroom door. All those nights she had cried herself to sleep. End poem.
Wonderful read. Beautiful. Yeah, there were two excerpts that really just hit me when I read it. We were too poor to own a washer and dryer, so every Saturday, Mama scrubbed all our week's ghosts. And remember her singing hymns about Jesus saving the world as if she was hanging up broken souls, perhaps a little bit of mine, so she could finally see me smile. But I really think she was hanging up all of hers. And I think you captured the beauty in sad childhood remembrances. I'm not even sure how I fully want to describe it, and I thought about it for a long time. What's the word I'm looking for? I just came up with painful nostalgia. And the beauty and painful nostalgia. There's probably some word in some language somewhere. Someone figured it out, but it's almost palpable, and that's quite an accomplishment in writing to be able to do that. So, hats off to you. I thought it was a very successful piece.
Thank you, Richard.
Absolutely. Let's get you some comments. So, Neutron, your thoughts.
Oh, just so powerful and melancholic. Two things come to mind. Firstly, a close friend of mine is going through a similar situation with the separation at the moment, and it hasn't been going all smooth sailing. And I read the author note, and if you don't mind, Naomi, I'll give it a read. My dad traveled all the time for work, leaving my English-speaking mum stranded in a French Quebec where she didn't understand a word and couldn't communicate with anyone alone to raise us three children. She would hide away to cry a lot. And I think Richard's comment is particularly poignant. It's a beautifully written poem, and it's very personal as well. And I could literally quote this whole poem, but I was drawn to that seems hung in a bee, sticky legs dripping of honey when the sky is hard and brittle as if ready to crack open, smothered under a candy coating that muffles the breeze. And then you go on to talk about the fact that both your mother and yourself have no smile, and it just reminds me that today everyone is obsessed with people smiling in photographs and hiding what they're feeling. And I just feel even in that expression, there's an honesty to it. And as Richard said, it's palpable. Only now are they really starting to tell young women and probably young men also that you don't have to hide behind a smile. And then you go further on down about the singing of the hymns and the broken souls. And, it's almost your mother and mothers in similar situations all put on that brave face for the sake of their children, but it's only in those quiet moments when you're alone with you listening behind the closed bedroom door that she cried herself to sleep. So that's when she's allowed herself to feel the wholeness of the situation. It was just so beautiful and melancholic. I was really impressed with his poem.
Thank you.
Great comment, Neutron. And Pam, I'll give you final words.
Yeah, this is absolutely just, it's stunning. I love the way you bring us into a snapshot of your life. Studying this picture and remembering is us studying this picture and remembering along with you. And I like how you describe yourself in the second stanza and describe your mother, both with that weight of seriousness already on you. And that last stanza hits hard, too, in the idea, you know, of just working together, of being together and noticing each other's sadness, but never really fully acknowledging it until much later in life. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thanks, Pam. And Neutron, I see you've got our next one in the room.
Pam, if you could give Incubus 2's poem a read, that would be great, please.
I would be very happy to. All right. This is, let me just get the link open. All right, hold on. Sorry about this. Being a little slow for me. Come on. If anybody wants to start humming the Jeopardy theme song, go right ahead and do that.
An Irish song.
An Irish song, right? Right. Okay,
yeah.
Now I got it. Here we go.
Okay.
Chemical Reaction by Incubus 2. First kiss gives wings to heels. A man turned mercury walks on air, painting Banksy's balloons and open hearts upon heaven's long forgotten back door. Doubt setting like autumnal sunset as alchemical hearts of pure gold turn to lead as carbon atom bombs and angels fall from mushroom clouds. Steam of lover's last exasperated breath becoming condensation upon the windows of his soul as now her coldness of words and frigid touch turns tears to falling frozen shards that in descent nails down the couple's coffin lid. End poem.
Nicely read, Pam. Naomi, what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, well, the last lines really are seizing it. Very powerful poem. The steam of lover's last exasperated breath becoming condensation upon the windows of his soul, as now her coldness of word and frigid touch turns tears to fallen frozen shards. But, what really puts the all the emphasis, the sadness is that in descent nails shut the couple's coffin lid. I think he's talking about I think he has metaphors in here for I'm not really sure. I have to reread this, but like from the first kiss. To the last of a couple's drawing apart here, and He has a part here about the bombs and angels fall from mushroom clouds. That makes me think of like nuclear bombs there with the mushroom clouds. I'm going to let other people comment on it and have their insight into this.
Absolutely, yeah, no, that's
great.
But it's
an excellent rewrite. Any write that makes you think and ponder is great in my book, you know. And this one really did.
Yep, absolutely.
I think you can take it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yeah, it is. I thought it was quite layered as well, yeah. I liked doubt setting like autumnal sunset as alchemical hearts of pure gold turn to lead as carbon atom bombs and angels fall from mushroom clouds. Just great wordplay, the double entendres, and the lyricism, very powerful riffing off of the prompt. Of pain-filled sorrow of codependent love. Very well done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
I was actually drawn to the same section as Naomi. So as now her coldness of word and frigid touch turns frozen shards that in descent nail shut the couple's coffin lid. And just as far as the poem is concerned, it almost read like three stages of a play with the scene set out well with Incubus's apt use of imagery. My favourite stanza, the one I just read, was the last one, but I have to say that distinctly you can feel the progression throughout the poem. Maybe I'm just a dark, sadistic person, but I was drawn to the last stanza. Should have been drawn to the as carbon atom bombs and angels fall from mushroom clouds given my name, but I have to say probably the sadistic side of me was drawn to the last stanza. Well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final word.
Oh, yeah, I thought this was absolutely stunning. I like how this is about how love is, you know, lust is that chemical reaction, and it, you know, compares it to that nuclear bomb that, you know, that just, and we have such that strong reaction, and then all of a sudden it just starts falling apart. It starts to turn cold. You know, just a wonderful thought to the idea of the nails that close the coffin lid of love. So beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, I see we have our next poem on the board. Who's our reader?
Yes. So actually, I'll get you to read it, Richard.
Okay.
I think it would benefit from your voice.
You got it. Okay. So this is by Where Then. It's called Morning News. She jumped from 20 stories at 4 a.m. somewhere in Shearbrook. The taxi driver said, "My waitress was so funny. She really had me on the floor. She had the stuff to fly, but she must have lost her wings." She laughed, and all the fools laughed with her. But late last night, the girl must have felt life wasn't worth it. What kind of pain could make her want to die? Another loser loses at the game. Tell me what's right, these people desensitized. Blinded by the burden of their slower suicides, they laugh. But in my heart, I weep for you. Sleep, poor bird. Good night. End of poem. Pam, if we could start with you.
Okay. Can you come back to me? My internet went out before I got a chance to get to the poem.
Sure, no problem. Neutron, if we can start with you.
Yeah, look, this literally in my pre-reading brought a tear to my eyes. The lack of empathy, the complete disregard for human life was the joke, which was quite flippant. I don't know that it was meant to be so disenfranchising of a life and death, and would rather focus, I think most of society would rather focus on the inconvenience that death brings to the traffic chaos than the human suffering that goes on day in and day out. I think that the poet has produced a poem that pulls at the strings, and as someone whom has attempted it and survived it and lost dear friends to suicide, I commend them for this nuanced right, which in tandem produced a very thought-provoking piece of poetry, nicely penned.
Absolutely, great comment. Yeah, I too really liked it. It was inspired by Prompt 7, which was from The Virgin Suicide. Basically, what we have here is a dreamer, somebody out of touch with reality. When she jumped, she probably thought she'd fly. And boy, what a great riffing off of that prompt. It hits the emotional pain of suicide, showing the truth of its heartbreak for us who survived the suicide. Very powerful. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, this really hits a nerve, you know. You know, when people can laugh at such a tragedy as somebody committing suicide here, you know, and you know, he says, "Tell me what's right." These people desensitize, blinded by the burden of their lower suicides. They laugh, but in my heart I weep for you. Sleep, poor bird, good night. You know, who is the loser at the game? Tell me what's right. Are the losers, you know, the people, they're losing as much because of their desensitization. I don't know if that's a word there, but they're desensitized so much by everything, you know, and it's a reality of the world today. You know, I read a poem the other day where I forget who it was by, but, you know, it was like news flashes, and it had a similar, message in it. And, you know, it was a news flashes that were going on about everything that was wrong in the world, and you know that we just you know, lay back and turn off our TVs and you know, just go on with our lives. We're in that kind of society there, and it's sad, you know. And yeah, the message is really, really powerful in this poem here. Great, right?
Absolutely. Great comment. With that, I'll turn it back to you, Neutron, for our next one.
Okay. So, Naomi, if you could give Babler's poem a read, that would be greatly appreciated.
Oh, wow. It would be an honor, Babler. Fate. I never believed in a deity. Not ever. At age 4, I sobbed, because I realized I was pretending to believe in fairies, and that meant I didn't believe in them. I felt pain at the loss of my own innocence before I'd ever set foot into a classroom. So it surprises people when I, who idolized Mary Curie at age 9 and wrote book reports on Isaac Asimov at age 11, tell people I believe in fate. I do. Not the fate of a passionate love or a life path of greatness ordained by an omniscient power, but because I believe in the Big Bang, conservation of mass and energy, the heat death of the universe, because I'm truly bewildered by science. I must. The cosmos is set in a galactic game of dominoes, the tiles aligned in just such a way from the beginning of existence. This quark strikes that quark. So it goes. I exist not by a choice or choosing or chance, but because that's how the cookie crumbled. To breathe, to touch, to love is such a great honor and a privilege. Everything foretold and yet a grand secret, a blind cog in the finest clock ever constructed.
Great read, Naomi. Pam, if we can start comments with you.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just wonderful, right, by Babbler. Beautiful read, Naomi. I really like how here we have the voice of someone who is not a religious person, not necessarily, you know, a spiritual person. I don't know if that's the right phrase, but, you know, but knows that life is a gift, that love is a gift, that the opportunity to you know, breathe and to go forth and to just fully live life is truly, you know, a privilege to be thankful for. And I like how she has that kind of that twist on this, right, of how she surprises people and she answers them in this poem, you know, with the idea of, yes, I have my own kind of faith and it has served me well. So beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too really like this one. To breathe, to touch, to love is such a great honor and a privilege. Everything foretold and yet a grand secret, a blind cog in the finest clock ever constructed. I thought it was wonderful riffing off of the prompt, being a bit bendy in the context of being a blind cog in the finest clock ever constructed. Just a really great take on the prompt, and very atypical look at fate, kind of taking fate and fatalism and turning it on its head from from a kind of Descartes scientific worldview. So I really like that too. It was a philosophical thought. Thoughtful poem. Very well done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, this was an excellent write. She's drawn on her own life experience, and it actually reminded me of my favorite dinosaur book when I was age 6 and questioned the local priest on creationism and evolution. Lucky he was beyond his time and years and allowed me to entertain both. In relation to the poem, this section here is so eloquently put. The cosmos is set in a galactic game of dominoes. The tiles align in just such a way from the beginning of existence. This quark strikes that quark, so it goes. I exist not by a choice or choosing or chance, but because that's how the cookie crumbled. So I think I also believe in fate, and I think that the prompt has been encapsulated so well in that. And Richard, I'm recommending this one for the finalists.
Yeah, it's a very strong piece, absolutely. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, she attacked that prompt so well with this piece, like just so powerful, you know. And you know, the first stanza I sobbed because I realized I was pretending to believe in fairies, and that meant I didn't believe in them. I felt pain at the loss of my own innocence. You know, at age 4, makes me think of one of my daughters, Kim, that was very old before her age. And when she found out, you know, she stopped believing in Santa Claus, she cried. And, you know, but this is just awesomely written all through, you know. I just love, like, the quark strikes the quark. And, you know, how she you know, not because that's how, but because that's how the cookie crumbled. She put the cookie crumbled in there. I just love that, you know. And then at the end, a blind cog in the finest clock ever constructed. She just has a way of putting words together that's just amazing. I always love Babbler's rites. They're so intelligent and they're so well constructed. And yeah, just amazing.
Excellent comment. Okay, so Neutron, where do we go next?
Okay, Richard, so I'm going to get you to read your poem if you haven't already done so.
Okay, so I chose the prompt. It was one of those humid days when the atmosphere gets confused. Sitting on the porch, you could feel it, the air, wishing it was water. So the poem is called O Air, Wish Not. O air, wish not to drown in this timeless sea, nor swirl midst whirlpools deep. Instead, come whisper your invisible beats between treetops and mountain peaks. Rise north through cotton clouds white. See and seek impossible stars of this long dead alien night. O air, again fill sagging sails of we who wither, dance, whirl, encircle us with your invisible promise of light. Wish not to puddle mid stagnant backwater bayous. Breathe your wispy prayers of sun-kissed infinity, held warm in cloud top white as you grow thin, ever thinner, till empty, yet pregnant with faith. End poem.
Sorry, I was on mute. Richard, let's get you some comments. So, Pam, if I can start with you, that would be great.
Absolutely. I really like this. It's a wonderful combination to me of a modern and classic feel. There's always to me a modern feel to your poetry, and I see this one in here. And yet with the declaration of O Air, you know, it has a very meditative, a very prayerful feel to it. I like that there's this personification of the air, the personification of the air, you know, drowning in worry and having to be told, you know, that it does serve a purpose. Oddly enough, as you were reading this poem and I'm looking at the words, I was taken back to that Shape poem we had earlier where they mentioned that famous haiku author, whose name I'm blanking out on, but we all know who I'm talking about. And I couldn't help but think of, you know, that haiku author and other ones that have been known throughout history as I was reading this poem, Richard, and how they always have such a reverence for nature and for finding purpose and beauty in the small things. And that's the kind of energy that I got from this poem. I think it was beautifully written and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
And Naomi, what were your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, this is, like Pam said, it has a aura of spirituality that are all around it, you know, and weave throughout it. I just love the, you know, breathe your whiskey prayers of sun-kissed infinity, held warm in cloud top, what top white as you grow thin, ever thinner till empty, yet pregnant with space. I just love that line, yet pregnant with space. You know, just an amazing, amazing ride all through. Richard, this is just so well written. Such beautiful imagery throughout.
Thanks, Naomi.
And Richard, I just have to say, a great brevity. And as you would put, ripping with the Jeffrey Eugenides prompt very well. And the rhyming scheme and the assonance did not go unnoticed. And it seems a different foray than what I'm used to seeing from you, but a great interpretation nonetheless. A magnificent word picture was painted here, and I was drawn to this section here. Wish not to puddle mid stagnant backwater bayous. Breathe your wispy prayers of sun-kissed divinity held warm in cloud-top white as you grow thin, ever thin, till empty yet pregnant with space. You capture that cool turn in the last stanza in a really efficient and, as Captain would say, economical manner, but not without feeling. Very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much. Okay, so where do we go next?
Well, I was going to ask, have we done formerly Cam 8's poem as yet? Because she was the first to post to the board, now under Namdas Domo.
Yeah, so we have not. Not yet.
Okay, I will just bring that up now. And Pam Ray, if you could give that one a read, that would be greatly appreciated.
Absolutely, I would be happy to. All right. This is Breathe by Namdas Domo. And it goes like this. I don't know why I am so surprised, for I've been here many times before. Last time it nearly killed me. This time I know the score. I check to see if I'm breathing. I hold my breath whenever there is stress, no oxygen circulating. I may faint down to the floor. I have to remind myself to breathe. I'm not ready to leave, not until I've fulfilled my dreams. The tears flow freely upon knotted sheets, eyes unable to see the sky, always looking down at feet. It feels like I'll never stop crying. Emotions bubble up and trickle down upon my mascara-stained cheeks. It feels like I will never stop crying. It feels like I will never stop crying, but I will. End poem.
Great read, Pam. So, yeah, this was prompt 11. You've been here before. It won't kill you. It feels like you can't breathe, but you actually are breathing. It feels like you'll never stop crying, but you actually will. And that's by Leanne Moriarty from her book, The Husband's Secret. So I loved where she went with the prompt. I have to remind myself to breathe. I'm not ready to leave, not until I fulfill my dream. She presents us with the true hero's journey. She is a warrior standing tall, feeling those uncomfortable feelings that she never allowed herself to feel. Now she is feeling them, crying what seems like endless tears, all in pursuit of her dream. And my prayer for her is that she attains the dream for her sake and for the sake of our fragile planet. So I thought it was a great piece. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Oh, this hit home, this poem. The tears flow freely upon knotted sheets, eyes unable to see the sky, always looking down at your feet. It feels like I'll never stop crying. I know the feeling intimately. It's funny, the first time someone said to just breathe, I wanted to flatten them because I thought it was such a
simplistic piece of advice, but it's only now, after many years having a mental health diagnosis, I realize how important it is, even in its simplicity. It was a great poem with a visceral edge through lived experience, and it riffed with the prompt very well.
Absolutely. Great insight there. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was beautiful and thoughtful and intelligent and very relatable. It does sometimes feel like in life that you're never going, you feel like you're never going to stop crying, you're never going to stop hurting. And as Neutron mentioned, and as this poem mentioned, it's so important to just remind ourselves to breathe and to remind ourselves that we will stop crying, that we will have that those moments where we smile. So beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. And Naomi, I'll give you final words.
Yeah, well, this is very relatable to everybody. You know, just the stanza there about I check to see if I'm breathing. I hold my breath whenever there is stress. No oxygen circulating. I may faint down to the floor. She explains that feeling so vividly there, of you know when you're just crying so much, or you feel like you're having you're dying, but you know it's like a panic attack. I have those. I haven't had one for a long time, but I used to have like awful panic attacks, and I'd faint. I'd literally faint. You know, yeah. So I understand this feeling very, very, very much here. She captured it so well. Great, right?
Excellent, excellent comment. Okay, and with that, I see we've got your poem up, Neutron.
Yeah, I actually picked a different prompt for this one. It was from the Nine Perfect Strangers by Leanne Moriarty. And the prompt is, she remembered her first ever boyfriend of over 30 years ago when he told her he preferred smaller breasts than hers while his hands were on her breasts, as if she'd find this interesting, as if women's parts were dishes on a menu and men were the goddamn diners. This is what she said to that first boyfriend. Sorry. This is what her first boyfriend's benevolent reply was. That's okay. And it's called Pussy Power. One, a degustation menu was served with paired wines, a platter of creamy blue cheese and Botrytis Semillon laid to waste. Her harem of men would feast on cantaloupes and honeydew. Fresh peaches were devoured as ravenously as her labia. Two, the denigration of her youth torn asunder as she ravaged with a gluttonous appetite through entrees, mains, and desserts. She would not atone for taking up space on the four-poster bed. They would drink her in, dining on her deliverance. Three, women tear strips of tenderloin from each other in order to succumb to the whims of men, taking stock only when it points like an arrow with wind assist. I will feast voraciously. This shrew will not be tamed, kept in a bell jar, deprived of oxygen, and so on.
Great read, Neutron. Let's get you some comments. Okay, if we can start with Naomi.
Yeah, well, this is, yeah, bravo. You know, that last, you know, the third one there, you know, this shrew will not be tamed, kept in a bell jar, deprived of oxygen. You know, you scream out there. And I love how you took food and, you know, as an extended metaphor all throughout here. Just amazing, amazing. And, you know, the way you, and the food you chose too, like the creamy blue cheese and everything and the peaches and the cantaloupe and the honeydew. And, you know, the way you used food throughout and drink, you know, to get across your point here and your in your writing. So just an amazing write here, Neutron. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Naomi.
Great comment, Naomi. Yeah, I too really love this. I had some comments I wrote, and it was so layered that I actually forgot some of the things. The allusions, you know, Shakespeare taming the shrew, and then Plath bell jar. It's just there's so much in there. Just a great job. And I love that whole second part there. Women tear strips of tenderloin from each other in order to succumb to the whims of men, taking stock only when it points like an arrow with winged assist. I will feast voraciously. This shrew will not be tamed, kept in a bell jar, deprived of oxygen. Really, just jaw-droppingly good, insightful, and painful on the sexualized relations between men and women and women in women. It felt like a battle between lion, lioness, and competing lioness for dominance over the Serengeti of their minds. It's a really brilliant piece. Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is just absolutely brilliant, Neutron. You know, that second stanza makes me think of that ancient Roman woman, and I forget her name, but she was basically like royalty, and she was well known for her sexual appetite. And, you know, but it makes me think, to me the absolute most powerful part, it's powerful all the way through, and I too really like the reference to the taming of the shrew and Sylvia Plath's bell jar. Very cool there. There's such a tone of empowerment in those ending lines, the idea of a woman who refuses to be tamed. But what really stands out to me is that women tear strips of tenderloin from each other in order to succumb to the whims of men, taking stock only when. You know, to me, it's that whole culture of women tearing each other apart, you know, through fashion magazines and other, mm-hmm. You know, the how we put ourselves up and each other up to too high of a standard because we're supposed to meet the expectations of every man's sexual appetite. So just powerful lines throughout and very well done.
Thanks, Pam and Richard. And
great comment there. Absolutely. Okay, so where do we go from here?
Okay, so I have a poem here by Lara Reese Poetry. And Naomi, if you could give it a read, that would be great.
Okay. You aren't the special title. And she wrote to, in the end, it wasn't death that surprised her, but the stubbornness of life. It becomes a trend, a fashion sense to the pop culture after the fancy masks, economic, recession, politics, transactions, cryptus, and refractions, and war menace, to finalize the everyday habits. Make the bed, fix the place, take a healthy feast, complete those 10K feet, be ahead, be yourself, be in control, and breathe as told. Take a bath, not too slow, don't waste assets, wear that dress with no sew pockets, and that face needs some red. Take those pills and meds, don't miss those drugs, blue profit. Play dumb, act happy, act in a pattern, as all of us learn. You're not exceptional, and you aren't the special title. Your choice is a simple denial as you wait in the office for the time to clock. One day has passed closer to the word, the end. End of poem.
Wow. great read. Boy, play dumb, act happy, act in a pattern. As all of us learn, you are not exceptional, and you aren't the special title. Your choice is simple denial as you wait in your office for the time to clock. One day has passed closer to the word, the end. I thought this was a really powerful existential offering on the nature and stubbornness of life. Just a great take on this prompt. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Oh, what a... You know what? That was just a happy accident that went after the poem, because I feel that this was a very empowering and interesting poem. And she captured the essence of living in a modern era, pop culture, pseudoscience and the like, and a way that we grasp onto metrics to live by in order to further our health. And on the other hand, personally, I would be dead without modern psychiatric medicine. I would not have survived my mental health. So I have to say, on the other side, it's a very thought-provoking write all in all. And my favorite part was to finalize the everyday habits, make the bed, fix the place, take a healthy feast, complete those 10K feet, be ahead, be yourself, be in control and breathe as told. It almost has the, I don't know if you guys remember Trainspotting, the introduction, I'm not sure who wrote it, but the Choose Life monologue. And it just has that similar vibe on second read in that stanza there. So really great poem.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Great comment. And I know we're running a little bit tight on time. So, Pam, I'm going to give you final word on this, and then we'll move on to our next one.
Absolutely. I really have enjoyed her poetry. This is the second time I've read one of her poems on one of our shows, and I hope we continue to see more of her. I really like, you know, I have to agree with Neutron, it's very empowering. It's the idea of someone going through the mundane of life and trying to find purpose and, you know, just trying to make it through and as dealing with the struggle of mental health. And sometimes that really is just a day-to-day struggle. And each day that you make it to the end, too, is a victory. So very well done.
Excellent comment. Okay, and with that, Neutron, I'm taking it back to you for our next one.
Okay, so Richard, if you can read S.M. Pierce's poem, A Southern Summer, that would be great.
Sure. Okay, so this is by S.M. Pierce. It's called The Southern Summer. It's taken off of prompt three. So prompt three was, it was one of those humid days when the atmosphere gets confused. Sitting on the porch, you could feel it, the air wishing it was water. A Southern Summer. Sitting on the little wooden dock, the big fat mosquitoes buzzing about in the air, thick like soup. Something about summertime in the south with ripples across the water and the occasional snake in the grass. Lemonade sweeter than honeysuckle. One long heat wave spent along the water. Nothing like the sticky sweat and bruised knees. The dirt dotting grinning chins and taste under fingernails. Silt. Between wiggling toes. Welcome home. End of poem. Okay, so Neutron, if we can start with you.
Sure. So I just have to say, great answer to the prompt. It was very sensory-driven poem. You could feel it, taste it, and the like. And it reminds me of the summers in Sydney when we are not being drowned by rain from La Nina. My favorite part was lemonade sweeter than honeysuckle, one long heat wave spent along the water. Nicely penned.
Sorry about that. Absolutely great comment. Yeah, and I thought it was a strong portrait of summer in the South. I definitely felt it on a visceral level, on a sensory level, which is always good. Okay, and Naomi, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, well, this is just amazing. I mean, you know, all the imagery she put in here, like you said, she arouses all our senses here. I just love nothing like the sticky sweat and bruised knees with dirt dotting grinning chins and caked under fingernails, silt stuck between wiggling toes. I just loved it. I loved it all throughout, you know. It's just a fabulous right here.
Mm-hmm. Great comment. Okay, so we've got like 4 minutes left. Actually, 3 minutes, 40 seconds. As opposed to fighting to get another poem on the board, I think what I'm going to do is just, first things first, let's thank everyone. So I want to give special thanks, a big shout out to Pam, because we had a daylight savings time issue, and I was here by myself. I think part of it was the St. Patrick's Day celebrating, and I private messaged her, and she came to the call, and that is one of the beautiful things about late night poets. People just kind of step up, and so I really do appreciate that, Pam. And it's always good talking to you too, and talking poetry. So it was fun. And of course, I want to give a shout out and thanks to Naomi. And special thanks to my co-host, Neutron. And also a thanks to Fill My Eyes with Poetry, who does all that behind-the-scenes work that makes these shows so successful. And the final thanks is to the poets that write to these shows every 2 weeks. Without you guys, there is no show. Okay, so I know I've got around 2 minutes left, and I want to express my special thanks to Pam by giving the floor to you so that you can tell us about what's coming up in a half an hour.
Well, up next we have Into the Darkness, where it will be me, Rex, and Victoria bringing you dark poetry inspired by Irish serial killers throughout history. So if you get a chance, call in, you know, or listen, whatever you're inspired to do. It should be an awesome dark show.
Wow, yeah, that sounds really, really good. I don't know, you know, Neutron, I have to say, neither one of us caught that this was St. Patty's Day when we planned the show. I didn't catch it. You didn't catch it, but
I didn't even think about St. Patty's.
Well, there's definitely plenty of very awesome Irish authors out there. That's for sure.
Oh my gosh! Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my favorite author is James Joyce, who is, you can't get more Irish than that. So,
that's so true.
His Bloomsday is coming up, so we'll celebrate that. That's for sure. Every year we do it. Okay, we've got 25 seconds left, and at the risk of repetition, I have to say that it is amazing how the late night poets just come through every time, and that is one of the joys of doing this show, is I know we've got a deep vault in, and I am truly appreciative. Okay, that's it. See everyone. Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Bye, Richard, and thank you.
Bye.
Bye.